Welcome back, everyone. People are going to be trickling in, but I think we're about ready to start up again for the second half of the first day of CodeCon. Our next speaker will be Ken Schalk, presenting Vesta. And I will turn it over to Ken.
Everybody hear me okay? So just before I get started, I wanted to tell you a very short story. I went out to dinner the other night, and I got this fortune cookie. It says, "From listening comes wisdom, and from speaking, repentance." I'm hoping that's not a bad omen for this talk. Anyway, so let's just jump right into this. What does Vesta do? Vesta does three different things. The first thing is source control, like a lot of other systems that you're probably familiar with. Keeps track of the changes that you make to source files, files that people edit, and they're going to be processed by something to make something, and assigns version numbers to them. Configuration, which is something that sometimes that a lot of people don't think about quite as much, is what you do after you have specific versions of different files, and that is figuring out which versions of the different sources go together to make a consistent set. And the third thing is building. Taking a configuration and processing the source files in that using whatever tools you need to process them with to generate result files. So Vesta was a research project that was done originally at Digital Equipment Corporation and then at Compaq after they bought Digital. It really is a very mature system. It's the development of it started in the early 90s, and there's a lot of history to it. And an important point about that is that the version that's out there as free software is actually a complete rewrite. The researchers built one system, and then after they were done with it, they said, okay, what have we learned about this? What did we do right and what did we do wrong? And they started over with a clean sheet of paper and built another system. And that's what Vesta is today. About 5 years ago, a little more than 5 years ago, the Alpha Microprocessor Group that I worked for started using Vesta to manage all the data for their chip designs. In 2001, the Alpha Group was sold by Compaq to Intel, and Compaq agreed that the microprocessor group agreed that the best plan was to release Vesta as free software. The first downloadable kit became available in the beginning of 2002, and Intel, that I now work for, is continuing to use Vesta at three different sites around the world on three different microprocessor projects. So why would you build another system like this? There's plenty of systems out there that do this kind of stuff. The problem is we all know that they're all broken in some way. Most people use CVS and Make to solve these problems, and everybody has some pet peeve about them, some reason why they think they're not, something that annoys them about it. So I'm going to spend the next few slides just talking about what are some of the problems that other systems have that Vesta is trying to solve. So a big one that, that Vesta tries to deal with is builds that you can't reproduce properly. Suppose that somebody installs a new version of whatever compiler you're using, but doesn't tell you about it, or didn't ask you if you wanted them to do that. And your build starts doing something subtly different, or the result of your build starts behaving slightly different. What if somebody has a binary version of your application that they've been using for a while, and it's exhibiting some problem? And you try to reproduce it, and you can't make it do the same thing. Why is that? You know, if you can't precisely reproduce a build, you might be working with something that's subtly different in some way. Another problem: inconsistent builds. If what, you know, if you may have seen this at some point, if, actually, I mean, I'm sure everybody's seen something like this, but something works for user A, doesn't work for another user, what's the difference between them? You have to spend a while trying to figure out, is it an environment variable, is it something else? Those can be a real headache. Another problem, another common problem is problems with dependencies. If you haven't specified the dependencies properly, or if your build system doesn't understand the dependencies correctly, you can have strange problems with your builds. Another problem is just having explicitly specified dependencies. Both users and tools like MakeDepend that try to generate dependencies for you don't always do the right thing. And some dependencies often just can't be expressed in some of these systems. Like, suppose you have a build that's compiling a source file and it has a series of include directories to look in. Well, it's not just that the file depends on the header that exists in the third include directory. It also depends on the fact that it doesn't exist in the first two on the list. There are a bunch of problems that cause people not to be able to do truly incremental builds. Sometimes you'll have a problem with something strange going on with your build, and you think, oh, the best way to solve this is to just delete all the result files and start over from scratch. Also, another thing that most systems don't let you do is if one user builds a particular version of a source file, most systems won't let another user take advantage of that build work that their peer has done, even if it would be completely correct to reuse that result. Dependencies that are based on timestamps, they just don't completely work right. If you ever have two machines whose clocks aren't completely synchronized, things will go wrong. Sometimes tools will write part of a result file, but it's sort of not complete or corrupt in some way. But the build system says, "Oh, it was modified after the source, so that must have been rebuilt." Another problem is that a lot of build description languages are very simplistic. Certainly Make's language is very simplistic. And that's why there are a lot of tools out there that generate make files based on some more abstract description of what it is you're trying to build. Now going on to some problems with versioning systems. A lot of versioning systems have problems with slow repository operations. A lot of systems use delta compression, and it made a lot of sense at one point in time when disks were really small. Disks are really big now compared to the size of source files, and it seems kind of silly to wait a long time for the system to do something just because it's storing things in this compressed format. Accessing old versions can sometimes be difficult and can also be slow. Accessing something other than at the head of the line of versions. And constructing a configuration, which what CVS calls tagging, can be slow for a lot of these same reasons. Another really critical problem is repository operations that aren't atomic. If you have checkout and check-in happening at the same time, or trying to happen at the same time, and they can somehow overlap each other, which is one of the classic problems of CVS. The user that's performing the checkout can get some of the sources that were being checked in and some of the sources from before the check-in. Ideally, you want all commits and checkouts to be atomic operations. Another problem, non-text data, storing non-text data. A lot of systems assume that the data that you're storing is line-oriented text, like C source code or source code in a lot of other programming languages. But that's not always the case. I work for Intel. We deal with a lot of data that's generated by some kind of a CAD tool and is not in a format that can be treated like text. You can imagine other situations, but like a game company might be storing, through, might want to store 3D models or something like that. A lot of systems have problems that make parallel development harder. If one user can pick up another user's changes without explicitly asking for them, it can change what happens in their build, maybe even make the build fail. And sometimes there's not even an easy way to figure out, well, what version was I using before this happened, and to get back to the previous configuration they were using. A lot of systems don't have really good support for distributed development, don't have the ability to replicate content between different repositories, propagate changes between repositories, and other features like that that you'd want in a really distributed system. So basically, what Vesta is trying to do is the opposite of all the things I just said. It's trying to have builds that are consistent. External changes shouldn't affect your build unless you ask for them to. Builds should be independent of which user does them. Builds should be repeatable. And let me just say exactly what this says. Any build that you ever do should be exactly repeatable at any point in the future. And that sounds like an extreme position, and it is, but it's really quite valuable to have that in a lot of situations. Builds should be incremental, even between different users, and there should be good support for parallel development. So how does Vesta do all this great stuff? First of all, it stores all sources and the tools that are used to process them in an immutable store. And the sources are theoretically immortal. Now, when I say sources from this point on, I mean not just the files that you type, but every single file that's used during the process of doing a build. The compiler binary that's going to read it, the system libraries or headers that it might read, because all of those things really are a source to the result of your build. They're a piece of data that affects how your build works and what's going to come out the other end. Vesta only does builds from immutable versions of sources. This is one of the ways that it guarantees build repeatability over time. And so, as I was saying, sources are theoretically immortal. Once you create a version, that version will always have the same contents if it still exists. Vesta's build descriptions are complete. Any parameter that affects the result of a build is part of the build description. This includes not just the versions of the sources and the tools that are going to be used for the build, but also things like the environment variables that should be set when the tools are run. Anything else that goes into the build is part of the build description. No part of the user's personal settings can affect the result of a build. Build completely specifies exactly which versions of all sources are going to be used during the build. And builds are versioned objects just like other sources. Vesta has automatic dependency detection. And you're probably going to be wondering, how does this work? And I'm going to talk about that a little bit later. Basically, while the build runs, it detects and records all the dependencies of each step and of the build as a whole. It's completely language and tool independent, so it's not like makedepend. It doesn't read your sources and try to figure out what the dependencies are. It knows what the actual dependencies are. This means that you can't have problems with builds due to missing or incorrect dependencies. It also means that users essentially never have to think about dependencies. It's just all sort of happens. It's under the hood. Management of result files produced by your build is automatic, and it's all out of the way. You don't have to have an area where you do a build. You don't have to worry about the storage space taken up by your object files. They're stored somewhere else centrally. When you're done with a build, you just tell the builder, okay, take the result and put it here, and then you use it. Part of the reason for this is to cache the results of builds across an entire installation so that multiple users can take advantage of each other's compilation work. Once one person builds something, everybody else gets to use the result files that were produced by that as long as it's correct, as long as the dependencies match. So now I'm going to start talking about the actual system and some details of how it works. The repository acts like a virtual file system. It exports an NFS interface, and you mount it like an NFS volume. Through this interface, you can have direct access to all versions that exist. You can go in and you can read the files. You can use any command line tool you want to on them because it's just a file system, and any tool can access them. All existing versions appear to be immutable. You can't make changes to them. A working copy during an active checkout is the only thing that you can make changes to. The repository has a variety of higher level features that are something that can't be represented or accessed through the NFS interface, and it has a remote procedure call interface that you can either, that there are a variety of tools that know how to use, and you can build software just using those command line tools, or you can use the C++ API and make calls to the repository yourself. Almost all operations to the repository, checkout, check-in, and a lot of other things, are atomic and they're fast. This is because Vesta uses a sort of a copy-on-write semantics. So when you get a copy of something to work on, no actual copying happens until you start writing something. Then a new file, a new underlying storage file gets created to store the new contents you create. But so this means that all of the checkout and check-in don't have to do very little writing. Repository servers can act as peers, and you can push changes from any one to any other one. This makes distributed development a lot easier. If you set up two repositories to allow it, you can do a checkout from some repository somewhere else on the net that has the master copy of something, get your working copy locally, and when you're done, check in back to that remote master copy. Storing binary files is not a problem because the repository treats everything that it stores just like a file system would. Everything is just a sequence of bytes. So now I'm going to go through a little bit of what do things look like inside of Vesta. Can you guys see the mouse pointer here? If I use this to gesture stuff on here? Okay. So the unit of check-in and check-out in Vesta is called a package. This is one of the packages that you would find in Vesta. The repository is normally mounted at /Vesta, and then everything below there is the contents of the repository. So you'll find in a package, you would find a number of read-only directories that contain the versions that already exist of this package. Each one of these has files, subdirectories, more files, and that's the contents of each individual version. They also have something called latest that looks like a symbolic link pointing to whatever the latest checked-in version is. And there's another directory here that I'll talk a little more about in a little bit called checkout, and that's where checkout sessions are stored. And you'll get to see what those are. Packages themselves are what we call appendable directories. That means you can add new things to them. Whereas versions are immutable directories. Once you create them, their contents can't be changed. So when you do a checkout, this is what happens. Several things happen, actually, simultaneously, because it's an atomic action. The first thing that happens, well, first thing, the set of things that happens. the next version in sequence gets reserved. A placeholder is created that belongs to you, and that's where the next version will appear when you check it in. At the same time, something gets created under checkout that has the same name as the new version you've just reserved. That's what we call a checkout session. Inside the checkout session, something called zero gets created, which is a version that's identical to the version that you're checking out. Also, over under this other hierarchy, which is where all the working copies appear, under a directory with your username, whatever that happens to be, a directory with the same name as the package gets created, and it's also identical to the original version. This one is immutable. This one you can make changes to. The checkout session contains immutable snapshots that get taken of a working directory while you're working on it. There's a tool that you run that just takes another snapshot. You can take as many as you like. When you're done and you check in, what happens is the last snapshot that you took in the session directory fills in, is copied essentially, to fill in the new version that you reserved when you started. And the working directory disappears. So now I'm going to talk some about how the builder works. This is the slide I said I was going to talk about later. How does Vesta how does Vesta do automatic dependency detection? So each time a compiler or another tool is going to be run, a temporary root file system gets created, and it does a change root inside of it. Does anybody here not know what change root is? I see no hands. This is a room full of Unix people. All right. So this makes each build step functional. It has well-defined inputs and outputs. It can't have any side effects on other parts of the file system. And this makes it possible to cache the results and reuse them later. The temporary root file system for each build step is provided through the repository's through a special part of the repository's NFS interface. And this makes it possible to take note of every single file read that happens during the build step. And all it does is for each file that's read, it says, okay, the result of this build step depended on the contents of that file. If there's some file that doesn't get read, then the result of the build step clearly did not depend on the contents of that file. And that's the magic of how automatic dependency detection works. So the builds are described in a functional programming language that's specific to Vesta. Most users don't need to know a whole lot about it because there's a library of functions that are provided that do a lot of the common things that you'd want to do. I'm not going to have the time to really talk about the language here. I'm afraid I'm not going to have enough time to finish everything I want to talk about here anyway, but the important thing to know is that it's a functional programming language, and that just like the build steps, each function that you call has no side effects. It has defined inputs and outputs, and again, this is all to enable caching and reuse across different builds, across different users. Some more things about building. When the builder needs to run a compiler or another tool, it contacts this little daemon called the run tool server over the network. The builder is multi-threaded, and it can have multiple individual build steps running on different hosts, so you can parallelize across a large number of machines. Also, the builder can be running on a different operating system from the machine that it's submitting the individual build step to. And one interesting thing that this means is you can run a single command and build something for multiple target operating systems. So some more cool technical features. Source files and result files are identified by a 128-bit number for purposes of dependency analysis. You can think of this essentially like a checksum. It's really more like a cryptographic fingerprint, which is where the name comes from. But it's essentially a checksum. This makes a couple of really neat things happen. First of all, if a source either hasn't been edited or gets edited back to being identical to some previous version of it, the repository knows and doesn't have to take up any additional storage space for it, and the build system knows, which means that it can reuse previous results that use the same source contents. Another, and this is, I think, a really interesting thing, it's kind of scary the first time you see it happen, but once you understand what's happening, it's really cool. If a tool produces a result file, like an object file, that's identical to any previously produced one that's still in the cache of the system, the build system knows. So sometimes, one place that I see this is that GCC will, if you only make changes to comments or something that doesn't really move where the line numbers of things, doesn't change the semantic meaning of things, it'll produce a bitwise identical object file. So sometimes I'll do a build, I'll see it compile the source file, and then it'll be done because it just knows that the rest of everything else it did, linking the executable, the library, whatever, is exactly the same as something it's already done. So I'm going to say a little bit about scalability now. Microprocessor groups at Compaq and Intel have been using Vesta for a long time. And at the largest Intel site in Massachusetts, where I work, we have over 300 users using the system every day. We store tens of gigabytes of sources. And again, that does include tools. And most of it is actually from tools. And hundreds of gigabytes of result data. An individual build that we do has over 2 gigabytes of sources. We do 500 to 800 of those a day. The repository server itself can outperform the native operating system NFS server that's underneath it. So it's a fairly good file system. And we have a large number of hosts in the pool of machines that we use for builds. Now, I think that's the end of my slides, except for the thanks slide. I'm going to stop this now and start doing the demo. How much time do I have before it's supposed to be Q&A? This is probably not very much, right? All right. Let's see how much we can get done in that time. Okay. So, I've got a set of things I'm going to show you here. So, this is an existing package. Just like I said, there's a bunch of versions. And there's a latest symbolic link here. Now, I'm going to ask the builder to build one version of that, and we'll see it produce a, don't pay attention to that version number thing. We have a long-running problem with getting the right version, just because we just don't bother to update it. So anyway, this did 2 build steps, produced the result, but the results are nowhere to be found. They're just in the cache. So now I'm going to tell it to get me a copy of them. And we're going to run the Hello World program. Isn't that exciting? Now, that's not what I meant to do. So now what I'm going to do is I'm going to go over to another hierarchy because I wasn't sure how much how the network access was going to be here. So what I'm actually going to do is I'm going to create a copy locally of that same version in a new package, okay? Ordinarily, I might be able to go over, I might go over the network and do a remote checkout of that package from the master copy that lives on the vestasys.org central repository, but I wasn't going to try to do that today, so I'm just going to stick to my script here. So now I'm going to check this out. I'm going to go over to the working directory that you can see it just told me it created. Okay, let's see what we got here. It's the contents of the individual version. I should have actually shown you that that was the same as version 4. I meant to do that. Let's just do real quick this versus the other one. Sorry, that's... And we'll find that they're exactly the same thing. Now, let's get the source code there. Let's make some change to it. Suicide little program. And let's build that. So this time I'm going to say vmake, which is a shortcut that does two things. First, it takes an immutable snapshot of the directory that I just had, of the changes I've made, and that's what this line here means. That's what advancing to means. Took the snapshot, put it in the session directory, then it built the immutable snapshot. Again, I said this in the talk, may not have sunk in, builds always use an immutable version only. Now let's take this, get a copy of that, somewhere back here, run that again. Change obviously happened. That's great. Now, let's check this thing in. So, I just went up out of the working directory and set a comment. I can look with one of the repository tools at the version that I just created. Sorry, having a little trouble seeing where my own cursor is here. And this is one of these programs that accesses meta information the repository stores. It tells me things like when did it get checked in, what did the person who checked it in say about it. A lot of things can be stored in the attributes. So now what I'm going to do is I'm going to do a more substantial build. So this is a package that actually has the build instructions for Vesta itself. Okay, and what I'm going to try to do, let's hope that this works the way I told you it's going to work, is I am going to make a change to a source file that will cause GCC to produce a bitwise identical result. Okay, so what I'm going to do here is I'm going to take one of these comments, I'm going to kill it, and actually because I have this write stamp thing in there, it's, well, no, actually, it didn't reproduce that. I thought I was going to put the write stamp back in, but I obviously don't have that Emacs module loaded. Anyway, so now what I'm going to do is I'm going to use another tool that knows how to take a build description and update the versions that it points to point to a newer version after taking a snapshot of an active working directory. So what it did there is it took a snapshot of the working directory that I made a change in that I already had checked out before I started this. It changed what the current what version was referenced by the top level build model. And if I tell it to build now, what hopefully we will see is that it will recompile that one source. And after that, everything else is just, okay, I'm going through and I'm trying to do everything else, and it's just gonna keep going through this because it's going to get hits on everything else because GCC produced a bitwise identical object file. So you're going to tell me it's time for questions now, right? Okay. Hand out the mic. I'm going to start something else while we're getting our first question. What I'm going to do here is I'm going to change the header file that's going to cause everything to recompile, and then you can just watch its dependency analysis do something cool. Okay, go.
First question is,
sir. On? Excellent. Now I have the power.
So this is a change management system, but I don't see any merging tools. Does it? Do you do locks? What goes on?
I did turn you into a shill, didn't I? I was just talking about this before this.
We were talking
okay.
about this, but
so,
I was going to ask
yes.
anyway.
The default way that checkouts and check-ins work with Vesta is a locking protocol. In the slides, when I said somewhere way back here, let's see if I can make it, if I can find the right one, when I was talking about how checkout works, I pointed out how there's a version reservation that gets created, and that effectively locks it from other people making changes at the same time. That's not to say that you can't do that, and that's not to say that you have to use this mechanism. That's just sort of the default methodology. You can do checkouts in such a way that you don't create a lock, and there's definitely ways to branch. I didn't feel I had time to talk about those now. Now, merging, that's a good question, and basically Vesta's standpoint on that is, sure, go ahead and merge. We have an NFS file interface. You can get at all the versions that you want to. You can use any conflict, any merging and conflict resolution tool you like. We don't build one in, and one of the main reasons for that is because we want to be able to, as Vesta stores files that are not necessarily line-oriented text, and it doesn't want to make assumptions about what the contents of the files are, and it doesn't want to try to impose some sort of a merging algorithm on top of it. At Intel and at the microprocessor group in Compaq, we think this is a really important thing because we store a lot of things that aren't text. So, next question.
Two questions, actually. For the dependency analysis, it sounds are you tracking all of the read calls or all the stat calls? It seems like you'd actually have to track
well,
the stats.
Well, that's a really astute question. It actually tracks a lot of things. The simplest way to describe what it does is that it tracks read calls, but it does track stat calls. It tracks directory listing calls. And the builder actually has a very fine-grained way to record dependencies. And that's how, for example, like I was talking about earlier, one of the kinds of dependencies that can't be expressed with make is some file doesn't exist. If a tool does depend on the merely the existence or non-existence of a file, it does recognize that, it does record that as a dependency, and it will do the right thing.
The other question is, this sounds like a free version of ClearMake and ClearCase, and that's very, very cool. Can Vesta handle disconnected operation any better than those tools can?
I would say so. I'm running it here on my laptop, and the laptop's not talking to anything else. I often use Vesta on my laptop to do work on Vesta itself, like on the flight out here or on the way back. And because repositories act as peers to each other, you can make changes in one repository and then just use the Vesta replicator, a tool that I didn't have time to talk about, to move your changes to another repository. And I would say that it is kind of like a free version of ClearCase. I would say it's better than ClearCase in a couple of ways, but you know, that's just my personal viewpoint. I might be a little biased.
I have a couple of questions, hopefully quick. First of all, you mentioned three things that it does: the repository, the configuration, and the building. How tightly coupled are those? Can I use one if I'm leery about using it for a repository? Want to use some other tool? Is that possible?
Okay.
Painful?
See, this is a really tricky aspect of it. One of the key ideas, one of the core ideas of Vesta, is that build descriptions have to specify specific immutable versions of sources. One of the things that I would say Vesta is better than ClearCase about is that ClearCase has this capability to essentially make a configuration that says, I want the latest version of this file. Which means if somebody else checks in a new version of that file, it'll sort of change underneath you while you're working. And the problem is, the Vesta standpoint is kind of an extreme position to say that you will always only build from specific versions of every source of everything that you're using. Once you get used to it, though, it's not really a problem, and it makes things a lot easier to keep track of. But because of that, the builder is tightly coupled to the repository system. That's not the only way either. The builder depends on the repository for this temporary root file system thing that it does. Now, maybe if you look at the source code and you see how it works, you could come up with ways to hook it up to something else or to rewrite it such that you could use it with something else. It's free software. It's LGPL. Go nuts. No one at this point has demonstrated a working model of that happening.
Okay. The second quick one
question.
What happens if you have a tool that writes a timestamp into its result? Do you have to...
That's annoying.
Right.
We've run into a number of tools over time that do things like write timestamps into their files or in some other way are subtly non-deterministic. Another worse problem is if you have a tool that tries to do something like make a network connection. Vesta doesn't do, like, it's not trying to be... It can't be completely exhaustive about encapsulating everything completely because to do that, it would have to essentially have a virtual machine that all tools run inside of. So really, it's only trying to work at the level of the file system. The tools can make calls to the operating system, things out on the network. It hasn't been a huge problem. We have had a compiler, a non-GNU compiler that puts... timestamps in object files, and that did mean that I couldn't have done the demonstration that I did first, where after it recompiled one file that produced a bitwise identical object file, everything else was a cache hit. But otherwise, the system does work. It just that's one thing that doesn't one piece of magic that it can't do when tools write timestamps or something like that into their results.
Are a set of related things that I'm curious about. How do you know when you get something from the master repository that it really came from the master repository?
That it did indeed come from the master repository. This is a good question. One of the areas that Vesta could use some improvement in is authenticating remote repositories, having a way of strongly authenticating remote repositories. At this point, basically, the way that it works is there's some attribute in the repository that says, if you're looking for the master copy of this, contact this host name, this port number. Now, if somebody has subverted your DNS or something like that, you could be talking to some completely wrong place, or if somebody changes that attribute and you don't realize it to point to some other place, you might be talking to the wrong place. They'd have to do a number of other strange things in order to make it actually work like the master repository because of the way that Vesta keeps track of which copy is the master copy, and that's another thing I don't have time to go into. But one of the things that we would like to do, but I have not personally found the time to implement, is something using public key encryption to authenticate repositories to each other to sign things that are being replicated. So currently, the answer is if your DNS server can be trusted, then that's how you know that you're getting the right thing. You have to remember, this is a research project that was in research for a long time and has only really been sort of forced out into free software by the needs of a single group that was using it. It hasn't had a long time out in the free software world, and there's a lot of things about it that I would like to see improved, but at this point, we're sort of limited by the number of developers that are working on it and what their personal needs and interests are.
Okay, I think we have time for two more questions.
Okay. There's somebody in the back who was trying to ask a question a while ago. I don't know if they gave up or not.
I got a quick one for you. Do you support Emacs VC mode? And how would you compare this to BitKeeper?
Okay, so Emacs VC mode. I think at some point there was somebody at Compaq who tried to get that to work, and I think they did, but they never gave it to me. So I don't have it. It should be... I don't know enough about Emacs VC mode to do it myself, but I don't know of any reason why it wouldn't be possible to extend it to use to work with Vesta. BitKeeper. What can I say about BitKeeper? I unfortunately don't know a whole lot about BitKeeper, because BitKeeper has this clause in their license that says if you work on another configuration management system, you can't use BitKeeper for free. And I haven't, you know, I haven't either shelled out for it or gotten someone else to yet. So what I can say about it is fairly limited. What I do know about it is that it's largely based on the idea of change sets and of merging the changes from multiple different users at the same time, which is more sort of how the widely distributed world of free software works than the model that the Vesta developers were using when they were developing it. Change sets are something, and sort of automatically merging the changes of multiple people is something that I am uneasy with, mainly because of experiences that I've had in the past and ways that that can cause problems. Vesta doesn't, as I said earlier, doesn't implement its own merging algorithm. It doesn't have any notion of change sets. So that's what I would say would be the major difference between the two approaches. And really, other than that, I have to claim ignorance.
I have a question. So does it do triggers at all? For instance, like in build systems that I've done, like I integrate PCLint, so PCLint runs every night, or on hardware things I run Verilint, or now what I do is have all my unit tests run automatically with the build so that if the unit tests failed and somebody fucked up the build and I'm not going to bother running the code that unit tests failed on. So
okay, so you're talking about something that happens after you build something or after you make a source change.
Well,
that are triggered off of which kind of...
Kind of. Like, for instance, let's say that I have one tool that generates the bytecode that something else consumes, for instance, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I need to run my unit tests on the bytecode compiler first.
Okay.
So I can't build the other thing. So there's a dependency there, well, but I need to verify that the first thing...
Okay. Anything that you can do by invoking a series of Unix commands that you can turn into part of a Vesta build. So in that situation, what I would do is I would make the unit tests run either as part of the build or maybe as a secondary build that you do after the first one succeeds, that maybe uses the result of the first build by just doing the same thing, getting a cache hit from after you've already built the byte compiler, and then performs the unit tests under Vesta control just like it runs other tools. The other thing that I think of when you say triggers is actions that happen when somebody does a repository operation like checkout or check-in. And that's something that we have a proposal on the table for how to implement it, but again, we haven't found the time to actually do it. We know how it's going to be done. We just haven't had the time to actually write the code to do it.
Okay, thank you.
Are we done?
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.